Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast. I'm Kyle Draper, joined by my co-host, A. Shirai Blakely, the Celtics insider for NBCSportsBoston.com. What's up, Shirai?
Good day to you, Mr. Kyle Draper.
Dude, I wish we could film this segment because you are super casual today, bro. You got your Boys and Girls Club sweatshirt on. You representing, dude.
They had me as their keynote speaker.
What?
And this is one of the things. Well, they had their annual award breakfast, and I was a keynote speaker, and I got a nice little hoodie action.
See,
here.
A man of the people. You know, I thought you lived up there in your ivory tower, you know.
No, I'm looking up to you in the ivory tower. I'm down where the people are, man.
So much to get to on this week's edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast. We got Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer. He's a friend of the show. We're going to talk about this Celtics start, 10 straight wins, the injuries, and everything else going on around the National Basketball Association. We are coming to you from the Cumberland Farms Lounge at our NBC Sports Boston studios. Cumberland Farms coffee, just 99 cents any size. That's 99 good reasons to switch. Before we get into the Celtics, are you a coffee guy, Sherrod, or no?
I can be from time to time.
I'm a coffee guy. I might head over to Cumberland Farms, dude, right after this. Like, seriously,
I've had 99 cents? I've had their coffee. It's pretty damn good.
I might check that out, actually. The light bulb came on in my head. You know how I work, bro. I get an idea.
Slowly but surely, the light bulb always comes on with you.
Let's talk basketball because people are not here to listen to you talk about coffee. They want to talk about these Boston. They want to talk about these Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
10 straight wins. So many injuries, but yet this roster, this franchise keeps chugging along. I think the most impressive thing to me is not that, you know, they've won 10 straight games, because that's impressive, but they're winning 10 straight games with guys like Shane Larkin and Shimi Ogilvie and Daniel Tice playing not just small roles. I'm talking, you know, legitimate roles during this stretch, right?
Well, to me, the impressive part is just how Brad has been able to really – pinpoint when I need Shane Larkin, when I need Shimi, when do I need Tice, and everything seems to be coming up roses for them. I mean, it's amazing how Brad has been able to really push all the right buttons at the right time, and hasn't had the luxury of having all of his options available to him. So, I mean, obviously the players, they've got to go out there and execute, but I give a lot of credit to Brad Stevens for putting those guys in position to make plays.
I remember a few years ago, you know, when their first time they made the playoffs, And they overachieved. And
they didn't belong there.
Yeah, they didn't belong. But people were thinking, man, wait till Brad gets good players. Will he be able to coach good players the same way? He's gotten better, Sherrod.
Yeah.
You know, usually it takes Brad till December to figure things out. I mean, every button he's pushed so far seems to be working.
But I think, you know, the answer is within what you've already said. He's got better players. So when you have better players, it's a little bit easier to be a better
Jordan
coach.
Crawford, Gerald Wallace?
You have me at Jordan Crawford. I love Jordan Crawford. But no, well, seriously, I mean, they've got better players. Yeah. And when you look at the teams they've played, they really haven't played a ton of elite teams. They've played a couple of really good ones, and they've handled their business. But it's not like they've had a murderer's row of, you know, Cleveland, Golden State, Houston, you know, et cetera, so on.
But you know, when you say that, to me, even the Clevelands, the Houstons, the Golden States, maybe not Golden State, but those teams are still trying to find each other.
I
feel like this is a weird season so far when you got a team like Detroit, 7-3, but yet you got Cleveland struggling. You know, you got San Antonio struggling a little bit. I just feel like so many teams are trying to find, you know, their way, find their rhythm right now, where the Celtics – they're ahead of the game, you know, and so banking these wins now I think is going to be important for this team.
Especially when you consider that, you know, the Celtics got 10 new faces on the roster. I mean, they only four cats were on the squad last year, and only one of them was a starter.
Right.
And he is Al Horford, and we don't know exactly when he's going to return to the lineup with now that he's in concussion protocol program, but Brad is just getting it done. Guys, that's really what it's about, just get it done. Get your 5-10 minutes here and there, make it happen. Try to flip 10 to 15 and keep it moving.
You brought up Al Horford, missed the game Wednesday. It was against the Lakers. What do you think with Al? I mean, last year, what, nine games he missed with
a concussion.
That's a long time. I mean, if we're talking 9 games, we're talking, you know, 2 to 3 weeks probably. What are you hearing about that? Is there, you know, Are there different levels of a concussion, severity levels? What are you hearing about
where
Al is?
There are different levels. They have not been specific exactly what Al's is, but the one that he had last year was more severe than what he's dealing with now. And from a simple fact that when the incident happened, he was still able to play on even afterwards. And he was one assist shy of a triple-double. Obviously, there were some symptoms afterwards, and then he entered the concussion protocol program. But, all indications I have – or that this is not going to be another nine games without Al situation. Danny Ainge alluded to that, earlier on the radio show when he was on 98.5 Sports Hutch, Sports Hub's Toucher and Rich.
Giving him a shout out.
Okay. I am, man. They're good people, man. And their station is right around the corner from me, It's all good. Number love. he talked about how Al, he doesn't, it's not nearly as bad as it was last year. And to me, that means he's probably going to miss another game or two, maybe three at the most. And if you're the Celtics, you're okay with that because it gives more opportunities for you to develop those rotation guys around him, giving them the kind of minutes that they think you want them to have. The guy I'm worried about that no one is talking about is Marcus Morris. And here's why. Yeah. After the game – after the Lakers game.
I know what he said.
He talked about how it was real sore.
Right.
That left knee was real sore. But he was asked about whether he'd miss any games, and he said, I can't as long as I've got to will myself to play. And I'm thinking, like, listen, if them knees ain't right, you're sitting down. They're not trying to hear that. You may fight it all you want to, but you will not win that battle.
And because – and this is with Al Horford, too. This team has banked up some wins that people didn't think they were going to. Nobody thought they'd be 10-2.
Right.
So if you take a lumps here, your lumps here for the next week, let's say you lose two or three, you're still at 10-4, 10-5. Everything's still okay. It's not like you're 3-7 or 3-8 trying in reeling. You're ahead of the game
now. When the schedule came out and I saw that 7 of the first 11 games were on the road, I'm thinking, okay, 7-4 will be a good start. Yeah. 8-3, that's kind of reaching. 9-2, hell no. And anything above that, it just wasn't going to happen. Right. And here they are, they've only got two losses, already in double-digit wins. This has been they have banked at least three games that they probably weren't banking on having at this point. And that gives you a little bit of cushion to maybe drop a game here and there that maybe you probably should win, but don't.
As well as they've been playing, though, the injuries are piling up. Jason Tatum leaving that Lakers game with a sore ankle, they're saying.
Yeah.
He was seen with a walking boot after the game. We're still waiting to hear word from the Celtics on the severity of his injury. Here it is, Thursday. How big is that one? Because I think not only is that big, Shirai, but then when you have Marcus Morris talking about his knee, if you had a healthy Morris, no minutes restriction, feeling good, I think you could be okay. But now you're talking Tatum and Morris. I think that hurts.
Jabari, Bird, get ready. Get that call up. Paige and Jabari. But they've found ways to win, obviously, with not being at full strength. But at some point it catches up to you. And there's only so many setbacks you can take before you just don't have the quality talent to go out there and win. If Marcus is not available and Tatum's not available, I just don't see them continuing to play as well. And don't forget, and Al may not be available. I mean, that's huge. You talk about damn near half your rotation.
But that brings me to my next point, because they have this disabled player exemption, $8.4 million. Do you rush to use that now? Bring in a guy like Greg Monroe who may get cut by Phoenix? I mean, why are you making that? See, this is why we need video, Jason. We need video of this. Sherrod's face right now. First of all,
because what I want to say, I can't really say because there's this whole thing called
show.
FCC.
Yeah.
And I don't want NBC Sports Boston to have to cut a check for my salty language. So continue. I'm sorry.
No, that's what I'm saying. They need some help. You're relying on G League guys right now.
Draves, they don't need any help, Draves. Listen, if we were in Cleveland and we're looking at like a 4-6, 4-7 record, okay.
All right.
Maybe you think about it. But as we pointed out earlier, you're playing with house money at this point. You actually have a cushion of sorts to maybe lose a game if it advances the development of your young guys, which I think for them, that has to be the mindset right now. Yeah. We're probably not as good as Charlotte right now if you take out Al Horford and you take out Marcus Morris and you take out, a couple other guys. But, man, that means more time for Shimmy. Man, that means more times for Daniel Tice. And even though we don't need them to be prominent players right now, if they get an opportunity to be in that role, what happens in the playoffs if they're thrown in that situation? They will have already been there, done that, so it won't be this kind of shock and awe scenario. So, yeah, I don't like the idea of going against anybody when I know that my team right now isn't better than them.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to add somebody like a damn Greg Monroe just to help me win a couple games in November.
All right, I'm just saying, it's worth a discussion. I'm glad we had that talk.
Worth a discussion, and if you're the Celtics, it's certainly worth kicking the tires around. But when you talk, there is, and that player specifically, I am not feeling him at all.
Who, Greg Monroe?
Greg Monroe.
But hold on, there was talk about Monroe coming here a few years ago when he was a free agent.
Let's deconstruct the sentence you just said. There was talk. A few years ago, not a few weeks ago, not a few days ago. We're talking years. That ship is past, amigo.
Okay.
It's Yabusele time.
Where's Yabusele been at, dude? Let's get this man some
That's
run.
Another one of the young fellas who, if let's say you get in a situation where you're missing multiple guys in the front court, he plays. He becomes the guy that you play.
Maybe we see him. All right, coming up in just a little bit, we'll get Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer on the phone. We're going to talk about all these injuries, of course, with the Celtics and also this 10-game winning streak. And also the Cleveland Cavaliers, they're reeling a little bit. Kevin O'Connor wrote something on The Ringer about LeBron and why they should be worried at the start for the Cavs. So let's dive into this conversation right now with Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer. Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer, thanks for joining the Celtics Talk podcast, man.
What up, guys? Thank you for having me.
Nah, you're a friend of the show, and anytime we need some real basketball knowledge, which Shirai can't provide, we come to you, my friend. So always enjoy our conversations. Let's dive into the Celtics. How the hell are they winning 10 games in a row with so many injuries?
It's all about the system. All about the system. I think it derives from Brad Stevens and the position he puts these guys in to maximize their strengths, minimizing their weaknesses. The fact younger guys like Shemi Ojeleye can go in there and get put exactly in positions where he can succeed being a 3-and-D guy, it's impressive. And it's impressive how guys fall and they just plug other guys in like Abdul Nader even when he gets in there as well. Just up and down the roster, there's a lot of good talent.
And Kevin, when you talk about talent, and you mentioned Shimmy, you mentioned Abdul Nader, you're also talking about not just young players. We're talking about first-year players, rookies. How unusual has that been? The fact that those guys have been able to find success so early in their careers on teams that, I mean, let's be honest, the Celtics don't suck. This isn't Sacramento. This isn't Philly. They're actually playing well on a team that is actually a good team.
I saw somebody tweet out a stat this morning, and I forget who said it, but I think it was something along the lines of the Celtics are the youngest team. They're the team that had the most rookies during a 10-game winning streak in league history. I forget who put that out there, but that kind of speaks to what they've done, playing five or six rookies over this stretch of 10 games. It's really just been remarkable, and yeah, it's unusual. They're one of the youngest teams in the league, despite the fact that they also have one of the best records in the league too. It's just unusual to see young guys performing at such a high level out there. Like if one of us didn't know who Jason Tatum was or who Jaylen Brown was, and someone said to us, "Oh yeah, they're 27 years old," you know, you would believe them. Like that's really like what it's like watching some of the young guys on this team.
Yeah, Kevin, and you know we're going to can talk about the young guys, but I want to talk about one of the veterans, Kyrie Irving. I thought he'd come here, be that Isaiah Thomas guy who averaged 29 points. His scoring is down from last year, but yet his impact may be greater. How can you explain that to me and the job Kyrie's been able to do?
I think you pretty much said it right there. I mean, his scoring's down, but his impact's been greater in the sense that he's defending consistently at a much higher level now than he did in Cleveland. Even though his passing numbers aren't necessarily up, I think he probably has more potential assists or he's creating more open shots for guys. The quality of his passing seems to be better. He's doing that pass where, you know, he attacks the lane and kicks it out with accuracy. And he's doing a lot of the little things out there for the Celtics. And I think his scoring is going to come. I mean, he's going to have a moment, a game where he needs to put up 40, 45 for the Celtics to win a game, and he'll be able to deliver because he can have those moments. And I think with his three-point shot, he's only shooting 32% from three so far this season. That number is going to rise. So a lot of open shots haven't been falling for him. So I think it's only a matter of time until his scoring increases as his three-point percentage increases too. He's been fun to watch.
Yeah, I would agree. And then I think, you know, a lot of his success, I think it has to do with what you alluded to earlier, the system. It seems that Brad Stevens has a system that, frankly, it forces him to be more of a two-way player. In Cleveland, it seemed that if he wasn't getting buckets, he really wasn't helping them at all, and they were perfectly fine with that. One guy who has not been one-dimensional since he's been with the Boston Celtics is Al Horford. Him not being available in kind of a limbo state right now as far as when he'll return, what have you seen out of Al Horford that has kind of really led to this almost, you know, almost reincarnation of him as an elite, big, all-star caliber player here in Boston?
In some ways, like, he's really the same old Al, like the same old good all-around, great all-around
player. Don't call
player.
Him he average.
No, he's definitely
you better not.
Better not
call him average because he's not average. Dang it.
He's Savage Al. That's Savage Al. He's somebody who I've loved for years, watching him back in Atlanta, just the little things that he does. And I think that's why he's so impactful for this team. Really, I think the difference this year is his rebounding numbers are up. I'm not sure if that's due to just opportunity. Balls are bouncing his way, or he's really aggressively chasing more rebounds. But other than that, I mean, he's really the same old, highly productive big man that he has been for years. It's just now he's doing it with maybe a little bit more talent around him, which I think enhances his skills even a little bit more. He's a terrific player. I mean, let's be real. Like, I don't know about you guys, but do you feel like, you know, we're about 3 weeks into the season now? If the season ended today, he would have to be in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation.
Oh,
right?
He will be the winner. Because Kawhi Leonard has not stepped on the floor.
But there's a guy out in Golden State named Draymond Green. You haven't been watching. I know you don't stay up late enough to watch Golden State and what they do, Sherrod.
Actually, I've watched Draymond probably a little bit more than you think. And if you went back and you looked at his numbers last season from a defensive standpoint, they did not blow you away. He was great with the eye test, but the actual raw data, not all that impressive. Now keep it moving.
Draymond
would win, but Horford would be right.
He would
there.
Be
he
right,
would be
right,
the
exactly. And I
I'm
give
giving
Al,
him the trophy right now.
You got to vote too, don't
Whoa.
You?
Both teams play hard. Keep moving.
But the thing with Al, and we know he missed the game against the Lakers on Wednesday, but another guy who stepped in for him, Aaron Baines, and we talked about Kyrie's impact and Baines, whether it's 10 minutes, Kevin, or 22 minutes, as we saw Wednesday night. His impact every single game is there. I thought he dominated that game against the Lakers, just his physical play, his physical presence. What have you seen from Baines and just the way he's been able to impact this team in this game?
For some reason, I just, you know, when you were talking about Baines, it reminded me of something Brad Stevens said a couple years ago about Gigi Datome, that he's a guy like you can throw him out there for 4 minutes or for 20 minutes and like he's always going to be ready. And that's almost what it's like with Aaron Baines. Like, regardless of the situation, whether he's starting or coming off the bench, or whether he needs to get more buckets, or whether he needs to come in late in a game, he just seems like he's always ready to play. He's always ready to go. And I think that's a quality that can be a tough adjustment for guys going into the NBA. Whereas for Baines, you know, he's a veteran. He's 30 years old now. And I think he's proven over the past couple of years with San Antonio and Detroit and now with Boston that he can play. And the fact he's doing it for the Celtics, both starting and coming off the bench, makes it all that more important.
And you know, we've talked a lot about the players and the system, but we really haven't talked about Brad Stevens and just the job he's done. Now, I'm of the belief that Brad Stevens is having the best coaching job of anyone in the league. And I'm trying to think of other coaches who, based on what they've done this season, are in the conversation. And I'm struggling with that. I mean, other than Brad Stevens, are there any other coaches out there this year who are really getting it done at a high enough level where you can kind of put them in Brad's same category?
But hold, Kevin, before you answer this, my gosh, dude. I mean, just erect a statue of Brad Stevens right now, you know? Just put him in the Hall of Fame. There's a dude by the name of Stan Van Gundy who's doing a hell of a job out there.
I keep forgetting so Stan's your guy. My bad.
You're making that face regarding Stan Van Gundy. Kevin, please.
You know
set
why?
This
you know why I'm
straight.
Making that face regarding Stan Van Gundy?
What?
Because Stan Van Gundy is Stan Van Gundy,
dude. Three losses, a half a game back at the Celtics or whatever it is. And let's not forget Frank Vogel also. I mean, come on, Sherrod. All right, Kevin, set him straight. Go ahead. I'll let the guest answer this one.
Sold the waters, but that's okay.
Brad's the coach of the league, coach of the year this season and today.
No doubt about that. Everybody's agreeing, but he's so making sound like nobody else is having good seasons. You know?
I mean, let me put the cookies on the bottom shelf once again. Kevin understood, but Drapes obviously didn't. I asked him, who else is in the conversation? Brad is having a great season. He was going to get to the others in the conversation.
Okay, I thought that was one of those, ain't really nobody else in the conversation. You were leading Kevin to say, really, Sherrod, there's nobody. Brad Stevens is up on the Mount Rushmore by himself.
It's called opening the gateway for your guests an informed opinion, something you obviously don't know anything about. Kevin, do what you do, answer the question. And give this man an informed opinion.
So I think Brad would be the winner today. However, I mean, if you're looking for other guys, Mike D'Antoni in Houston without Chris Paul for all but the first three quarters of the season, that's been impressive. You know, as Kyle said, Stan Van Gundy's really coached the hell out of the Pistons. Look, Frank Vogel for the Orlando. I think Dwayne Casey with the Raptors kind of helping to install a new system, more ball movement, more shooting. Those are some guys. I mean, I wouldn't put many others in the conversation if you're looking at, you know, team record. Maybe that'll develop over the course of the season. But right now, Brad Stevens definitely the guy.
Go ahead, Drapes.
See? I mean, I agree. Brad Stevens is the guy. one guy who's not in that running is Ty Lue out there in Cleveland. I know you wrote something on the Ringer about the Cavs and why they should be worried. So tell me, why should LeBron James be worried right now?
So I think with Ty Lue, I mean, it's hard for him in the sense that I don't love their personnel. I think you look up and down that roster, like we talked about with the Celtics, how deep they are and how many good, talented players they have. With Cleveland, it's kind of the opposite. I mean, Derrick Rose, J.R. Smith, Dwayne Wade, Kyle Korver, Iman Shumpert, Jose Calderon, none of those guys are better than average on the defensive end of the floor. Smith has moments on that end, but he's, for the most part, I would say average. And then once Isaiah Thomas comes back, another poor defender on the team, and Isaiah's going to help them on defense because of his offense. Like, he'll help their scoring, which will help their defense. But at the same time, like, they have nobody on that team that can lock down on the perimeter. LeBron James can't do it every night. Jay Crowder, as we've seen the past couple years in Boston, has gotten a little bit worse each season. He's good, but not great defending guards. They just don't have the personnel. And so I think it's really hard on Ty Lue to put out winning lineups on that team. They simply have to outscore everybody every night. And right now they don't have enough three-point shooting either. So as much as I don't think Ty Lue's that good of a coach, I think he's probably an average coach at best. It's been harder on him because of the injuries the teams have, but also the I think, mismatched personnel. They're not a great mix.
Right. And the players that you ran down a list of right there, you know, once upon a time, all those guys were really good. The bad news is for Cleveland, that time has passed big time. Kevin, we're going to play a little bit of game called best case, worst case scenario, my friend.
Okay.
I'm going to give you the name of a team, and I want you to give me a best case scenario and a worst case scenario for that team, okay?
All right, sounds good.
All right, Boston Celtics, best case scenario, worst case scenario. Go.
Best case scenario, Hayward comes back and they go to the finals. Worst case scenario, Hayward doesn't come back and they lose in the second round.
Second round.
That's going to be a tough matchup, that second round. You know, depending on who they match up against, that should be very interesting. All right, Kevin, let's keep it going. Cleveland Cavaliers.
Best case scenario, LeBron James goes on another historic run where he averages like 40, 15, and 8 in the playoffs, and they go all the way to the finals, and LeBron somehow pulls it out. Worst case scenario is that whatever's happening right now just continues, and LeBron says, bye, I'm going to L.A. See you later, everybody. I'll come back when I buy the team in a couple years, in about a decade.
When his son is eligible for the draft, yep.
Yeah, exactly.
The Milwaukee Bucks.
They're interesting. Ooh. Best case, Eric Bledsoe is exactly what they needed. Helps out Giannis Antetokounmpo create an easier buckets. And maybe they make a run of the East Finals or even the Finals. worst case scenario, their defense is really bad. Mm-hmm. Maybe that never gets better, and they're just a big flat disappointment in the playoffs.
Interesting. Let's go out west right now. Actually, stay out east because the two teams that we want to touch on, let's start with the Wizards. You know, they haven't looked good so far to start this season.
No. Best case for the Wizards, I think it's got to be that for whatever's going on with John Wall, I guess the worst case is that John Wall continues, you know, struggling like he is now. He seems to really be pressing out there, trying to do too much. So that's probably the worst case. Best case is I think Otto Porter's been terrific.
Yeah.
If he continues that, if Kelly Oubre keeps getting better, which he has this season, that's good. Bradley Beal's playing on top of his game. So it really comes down to John Wall getting back to what he was, because everybody else on that team has been either getting better or they've already reached a new level. So I think if John Wall can get back to what he was, then the Wizards could be a real threat in the East.
Kyle Draper's favorite team in the East, the Detroit Pistons.
Detroit basketball. What you got?
I would say best case scenario is that they're able to – this is going to sound like I'm really selling them short, but that they get like the 4 seed or the 5 seed. I would just
do they win
the
round
they,
though? Do they win the round?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Trust Stan. I know.
Ifs.
I'm with you though. I'm sorry.
There's a lot of ifs for that team, right? Like Drummond needs to keep shooting free throws at the level that he is. You know, I mean, like there's so many big ifs with them where it's like maybe over the course of the season, all the good things happening now suddenly revert back to what we might have expected entering the season, where they're just fighting for the 7 or 8 seed.
All right, I got one more question for you. This is a late ad. The producer giving me dirty looks like, Drapes, you're going over our time. But we got Kevin O'Connor. It's not all the time we get Kevin on here, so I'm going
to
take as much
Wait,
time as
out
I
the
want.
Bus and just run over here.
I got all afternoon, guys.
We got all day with Kevin.
We're just going to cut out when you talk, Drapes.
I know, right? You're going to cut me out. Yeah. Kevin, but you
save the quality.
You wrote a lot about Lonzo Ball. We saw him in Boston Wednesday night, 4-15. Historically, his numbers, you know, are bad, you know, historic proportions. What's going on with Lonzo Ball? He says, you know, even the bad shooting is getting into his head. What do you think about him so far?
Lonzo's he just turned 20 years old last month. So he's barely outside being a teenager. And I just feel like expectations were way, way too high for him entering the season, where some of his weaknesses that he had at UCLA, whether it was the lack of an advanced ball handling moves, whether it was, you know, sometimes lazy-ish defense, whether it was, you know, his lack of elite at-rim finishing or the shaky jump shot, all those things are still weaknesses. And it's unfair, in my opinion, to expect those things to become strengths in just 7 or 8 months since the end of the college season. So it's the type of thing where if he still is, like, having a horrible three-point shooting percentage and a horrible at-rim finishing percentage 2-3 years from now, then it's definitely time to start worrying. But I think you need to give him past his rookie season to really start worrying about those things. Because the fact is he's still making guys better with his passing ability. That was really the thing that you wanted to see translate the most, and that has already. So if everything else comes, which it could over time, he's going to be fine. He's going to be around the NBA for a long time. I definitely am worried about the shot. You mentioned the article I wrote on The Ringer a couple months back. The shot might have to change his mechanics. And anytime you're talking about changing mechanics for a guy, that's a serious concern. But with all the other stuff, I'm not too worried. I just think Lonzo has the it factor.
And so do you, my friend. My friend.
Kevin,
O'Connor, always a pleasure to have you.
Kevin
anytime.
Went from ashy to classy, man. I'm proud of this dude. Seriously, you know. He used to be the guy, the intern, the part-timer here
well, see,
in studio.
But Drapes, while you were in your ivory tower doing what you do, I'm down with the people like Kevin, watching him grind, respecting his grind, giving him all I had to give. And now look at it. I'm so proud of you, Kevin. I'm so proud
of you, guys. I appreciate it. I appreciate you having me on today as well. It was fun.
All right, Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer. Thanks so much, Kev.
Thanks, guys. That was a good time.
Thanks again to Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer. Good stuff from him. Dropping some knowledge on Sherrod, so that was always good stuff. Before we get out of here, we got to make sure you remember Quick Slants, the podcast with Tommy Curran, Phil Perry, and Gerard Mayo. They got 3 episodes this week, including Julian Edelman joining Tom and Phil to talk about his book. Make sure you check it out. It's Quick Slants, the podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on all your favorite podcasting apps. That'll do it for this week's edition of the Celtics Talk podcast. Make sure you always rate us, give us a review, you know, show some love to your boys. You know what I mean? We need some love out there on the podcast world. For A'Sherrod Blakely, I'm Kyle Draper. We'll see you next time on the Celtics Talk podcast.
We out!